south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, just a quick announcement before we get going. In 2 days, that will be the 1st of November, my early bird discount offer for my January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar expires. So you have 2 days from the time this show goes out on Sunday, October 3rd, to get in on the deal. So what's it all about? If you go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's January 2017 seminar link, you'll see the prices there reflect the early bird discount. And the regular prices will come into effect later this week. And yes, even though the seminar is more than 2 months away, and it's more than three quarters filled already, there are a few spots left, and you can still get in with that early bird discount. And by the way, I mentioned in a previous show that a lot of people come down as singles, and they mention they don't mind having a roommate. And if that happens, they know they can get another $500 discount, because with a roommate, it's double occupancy. And generally, that's possible. In fact, in this seminar, the upcoming one, I've already hooked up four people that way. Of course, they don't know each other, so what I do first is hook them up by email, and then they Skype and see if they're compatible, and generally it works out fine. So there you have it, some more news about the upcoming seminar. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about Nicaragua, which seems to be, along with Colombia, every expat blogger's idea of the next Costa Rica. Of course, if you've ever been to Costa Rica, you'd know that's actually sort of a curse. Does sound good in print and in blogs, though, because, you know, Costa Rica is every first world American's idea of a great, balmy, south of the border, Latin American vacation destination. And it is a nice vacation spot, but I wouldn't want to live there. And how do I know that? Because I did live there. All right then, so what about Costa Rica's northern neighbor, Nicaragua? You might not know it, but this is the presidential election season and Ortega's going to win, of course. He's a dictator. And if you think he isn't a dictator, then how would he have the power to ban 28 congressmen from seeking re-election? He just decreed they weren't eligible. And get this, they were all from his opposition, the Independent Liberal Party. He even banned the opposing presidential candidate from running. The guy's name is Eduardo Montalegre. So it's a done deal. Ortega's going to win again. By the way, his party changed the constitution too, so he can run indefinitely without term limits. He's a dictator, no doubt. Though he doesn't rule with a hard fist, he's a soft-handed dictator because there's a lot of money flowing into Nicaragua. And he and his family and all his relatives are multimillionaires now. However, that overflowing public trough is about to come to an end, you know. Looks like the good times are over. Even though according to government figures, yeah, right, don't you just love government figures? Anyway, recent Nicaraguan government figures are saying poverty has dropped from 42.5% in 2009 to 30% in 2015. Yeah, you gotta love those poverty statistics. What they call poverty in the States is solid, if not upper middle class down here. Meanwhile, what they call poverty here in Latin America is solid middle class in Africa. By the way, what they call middle class in the United Kingdom is white trash poor in the States. Who to believe, huh? Oh, and by the way, I always love the official government statistics on employment and unemployment in Latin countries. In Nicaragua, they say it's 6.8%, but how could they even measure it to tenths of a percent? For that matter, how could they even measure it accurately at all? Since it's estimated by outsiders, not government statistics, that 40% of the people in Nicaragua work off the books, have no receipts, pay no taxes, and it's all cash. Hey, I'm not putting it down. You gotta love it. Sure keeps the government's fingers out of your pocket. And by the way, you know that every Latin country has a national healthcare system. It's basically free for all nationals and residents. Of course, remember, it's a terribly chaotic, broken-down medieval system, but still, it's free, and local Latins use it a lot. Just walk into a public hospital emergency room, and you'll see and smell what I mean. Like expat Eddie says, and he's always good to turn a phrase, it's a fine mixture of blood, sweat, and tears with more than a hint of pee, poop, and vomit. Now, it's not to say that Latins love or even like that system. but it's free, you know, and they've come to depend on it and look at it as a civil right. So what if doctors don't have gloves or disposables, even electricity or running water sometimes? Anyway, in order to get free treatment at one of these public hospitals, get this, you have to be registered in the government social security system, which means you have to have a job on the books. And if you do, the government takes a portion out of your check each month, just like they do in the states for Social Security and FICA, Medicare, Medicaid, and all that. Otherwise, if you're not registered with a job in the system and haven't been paying in, you actually get billed when you go to one of those public hospitals. Of course, it's very cheap, but you still get billed. So in effect, that 40% of Nicaraguans who are working off the books don't have free health care at all. However, and you'll find this out if you live in a Latin country, if you try to take, for example, your cleaning lady, your maintenance guy, the guy selling pirated CDs or your builder, and you say to him or her, I'll tell you what, from now on, we'll put you on the books. I'll pay you by check, hook you up with the country's social security and pension system, and that way you'll have free health care. How about that? By the way, all Latin countries have the equivalent of a social security pension system, but you have to pay in, though the average payout is anywhere from 50 to 100 bucks a month. Anyway, when you present that argument to your workers or anyone who's off the books, they always kind of chuckle. They answer quickly, almost too quickly, saying, no thanks, I'd much rather have the cash. Because of two things, really. Number one, they're all living on the edge. And secondly, they know from experience, any money taken out of their check, even if it's only 3, 4, 5%, will just go to a useless, corrupt government system, and they have no illusions that they won't get ripped off somehow in the end. Sound familiar? By the way, not all gringos and expats who live in Latin America are the kind of people you want to hang with or even be friends with. In fact, not so long ago, I was close to the gringo tourist trail, and I ran into some expat gringos who asked me that loaded question, who are you going to vote for? Then I found out these guys belong to Republicans and Democrats abroad. And my first thought, what a bunch of lame-brained idiots. I thought, what are they doing down here? They should be up in the States kissing the asses of their corrupt heroes, not spreading that toxic political excrement down here in Latin America. We don't need that. But that's what happens as you get closer to the gringo tourist trail. You meet more and more first-world lemmings who've been brainwashed. Then you ask them why they're down here, and you find out they left the States because they can't live a first-world life on their social worker pension, school counselor pension, military pension, teachers, or whatever pension. And they all want more from the government, and most of them were pissed off when Bernie Sanders dropped out. And the thing is, you know, when you meet opinionated, dunderheaded gringos with incomplete educations like that, you find out that so many of them had government jobs back in the States or worked for NGOs, and their most frequent past occupation up in the States? You'll never guess. Public school teacher! Hey, now, doesn't that follow a pattern, huh? And like I said, when I run into gringos these days, they always ask that same question. Who are you going to vote for? With more than half of them saying, I hope it's not Trump. And occasionally I'll reply by saying, I'll vote for anyone who abolishes the IRS, the Federal Reserve, a guy who'll close down all 300 foreign military bases, put us back on the gold standard, enforce one-year congressional term limits, and make the job of congressional lobbyist illegal. But that's never going to happen, which is why I voted with my feet. And why you should too. In fact, the last guy I voted for was Ross Perot. You know, the guy that was right when he said, you'll hear that big sucking sound of jobs leaving America. But I digress as usual. We're talking about Ortega and Nicaragua. The next Costa Rica, right? Well, according to people in the know, that is not the media, but people actually living in Nicaragua, those great economic conditions and inflows of foreign money that allowed Ortega, a self-professed socialist, to play populist and even democratic. And of course, you get elected in Latin America by handing out freebies to the poor right before the election. You know that trick. Anyway, in the new year, Nicaragua will be facing serious economic trouble. Why? Because, for one thing, Venezuela, which is a terrific basket case, you know, they were selling Nicaragua oil way under market price, a deal that Venezuela's Hugo Chavez made with them a long time ago, and now it's about to expire. In fact, Nicaragua now owes Venezuela $3.5 billion, and Venezuela's pressing for it because they're dead broke. Okay, so that's one shadow looming in the new year. How about this one? The expected $50 billion plus investment in the proposed Nicaraguan canal will never materialize, being that its Chinese backer lost 80% of his wealth in the market last year. Well, I warned you about that one even 3 and 4 years ago, didn't I? By the way, if you're driving around Nicaragua this month, you'll see that all the little stores have the traditional red and black Sandinista flag hanging. You know, it's election time and you gotta have that stuff. But the truth is, all the locals remember what Ortega was, a Sandinista guerrilla, and they feel they have to fly it, or else. Most will tell you they don't support the guy, they just feel it's better to keep it flying, you know? Those little guys eking out a living certainly don't want to get on any dictator's feces list now, do they? So there's a little tidbit for all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes who are thinking about Nicaragua as your Plan B destination. So it looks like soon there we'll have the end of the good times, and the economy is poised to take a serious dump. That coupled with the fact that Ortega is a socialist and he's planning on staying in power indefinitely. Well, I wouldn't want to be a gringo or expat living under those circumstances, but that's just me. Oh, and by the way, did you know that Ortega, the president of Nicaragua, just had a meeting with Putin and some of his delegates? By the way, Ortega addresses Putin as brother president. Anyway, they're in discussions right now about establishing a Russian base in Nicaragua. How about that? In fact, they signed a short-term agreement that allows Russian military formations, ships, and aircraft to visit and dock at Nicaraguan ports as part of an ongoing training program, whatever that is. And you know, oddly enough, all of Nicaragua's Latin neighbors, Honduras, Guatemala, Belize, Salvador, and Costa Rica, as Canadians would say, they're not really saying much. They don't seem to look at this as a threat because, you know, Latin countries traditionally being so poor and their leaders so corrupt, they'll take the money and the help and the bribes and the loans from anyone who'll give it to them. Oh, and by the way, with the idea that Russian can bring military formation ships and aircraft now to Nicaragua, the U.S. is definitely going to want a presence in that country and they'll be monitoring and spying. It will be spy versus spy, you know. And that, in the end, will make Nicaragua a strategic hotspot. Don't like that at all. Which is another reason I don't like to recommend Nicaragua anymore as a good Plan B expat destination. Just too many wild cards there for me. Now, you know, I'm not knocking Putin. I think he's a thousand times better leader than the Bushes, Clintons, and Obamas combined. It's just that when any powerful country starts putting bases around the world like those malignant, pus-brained idiots in the U.S. government, they disrupt and dislocate all the normal life around them. I mean, just ask anyone who's ever lived close to a town with a big military base. Okay, enough said about that. Let's move on. You know, I continuously get emails from people asking me about natural disasters like earthquakes, hurricanes, and volcanoes. As if you don't get your share of natural disasters up north, right? So let's start out by saying that some of Latin America is in a hurricane corridor. At least the Caribbean coastal side of Central America. Oddly enough, hurricanes seem to lose their steam completely when traveling south of Panama. So, Colombia, which is immediately south, might get a little blowback and some bad weather, but they almost never get nailed by a full-force hurricane. That includes all the countries with the South Atlantic coastal region like Uruguay, Brazil, Argentina, etc. Sure, they get some bad weather, but almost never a full-force hurricane. And strangely enough, on the Pacific side, you do get some hurricanes, although those hurricanes, which are less frequent than the Caribbean or Atlantic ones, almost always seem to hit Mexico, almost never swinging far south and hitting the Pacific side of Guatemala or El Salvador, for example, with full force, although they can get some pretty nasty storms. The true hurricane corridor in Central America is on the Atlantic or Caribbean side. And the truth is, if you live 100 kilometers or so from the Atlantic or Pacific coast, even if a hurricane hits, oh, you'll get some bad weather for a few days, but you won't have broken windows and your roof will stay on, unlike those who live directly on the coast or 5 or 10 kilometers from it. Sometimes they'll get hit and hit hard. So then how about volcanoes and earthquakes? Yep, all you gonna-bes, wannabes, and all of us expats have to live with those. That's the way it is. And you know, when friends and family come down from the States to visit us short and long-term expats, they all seem to want to get up close and personal with an active volcano. Kinda. I've had first world visitors express that desire many times. In fact, right now, from where I'm doing this show, I could get in my car and drive maybe 20 minutes and see an active volcano far in the distance, blowing little plumes of smoke. In fact, down here in Latin America, it's very desirable in a real estate sense to have a nice view of an active or inactive volcano from your own property. Thus, unobstructed views of volcanoes, active or not, bring higher land prices. Of course, you don't want to be too close unless the volcano is dormant and has been throughout recorded history. Even so, you're never 100% certain it won't blow. With that, I should mention that I know a gringo who's quite well off, who's just obsessed with volcanoes and built his house at the base of a dormant one. It's a beautiful place with a fantastic view, but what he didn't count on was the severity of the rainy season. He lived there a few years, everything was fine, he loved it in fact, but then there came a particularly severe rainy season. And you know, pure volcanic soil is different from other soils. It's rather loose and crumbly and doesn't pack easily. It's not like clay or some of the other dense soils you're used to up in the States. And that year, his whole backyard got hit with a mudslide, an ugly mess that destroyed his beautiful garden and landscaping and cracked his pool. So yes, he has a tremendous view, but he paid for it twice. And later, he had to bring an earth mover in to re-sculpt his land and build a retaining wall. But still, he's happy as a clam and glad he owns that property. For one thing, he says he never would have been able to get a permit to build such a place up in the States. Which brings us to another point. You can buy and build on land down here in Latin America that you'd never be able to get a permit for up in the States. And do note that very few places in Latin America, that is, municipalities or environmental studies groups, can even tell you what the 50 or 100-year floodplain is. So you'll have to do your own homework on that. However, what's nice about living in the Altiplano is that you're already 4, 5, 6,000 feet above sea level, and the drainage is absolutely great. Unless you're situated in some kind of hollowed-out bowl or convergence of weird angles. But if you do end up building or buying in the Altiplano, which longtime listeners will know that's my favorite place, in most regions, there'll be no such thing as a 100-year floodplain because the drainage is always looking to rush to sea level. That said, once again, I'll repeat, I don't recommend you live within 10 miles of an active volcano, even 15 miles for good measure. Of course, you've all probably seen on National Geographic and the Nature Channel some of those deadly pyroclastic clouds that sometimes explode from volcanoes, the ones that suffocate and kill everything as they roll through. That and the lava are what people remember about volcanoes, the two things they're afraid of when they come down here and see volcanoes, especially when people are living near them. So with all the hundreds of active volcanoes in Latin America, should you be worried? Well, for one thing, most active volcanoes do not have pyroclastic clouds that extend beyond their bases, so almost always confined at or near the summit. And even the rare big pyroclastic cloud almost never rolls out beyond 10 miles. In fact, to give you an idea, Pompeii, which was hit by a pyroclastic cloud, was situated 5 miles from the base of Mount Vesuvius. Which is why I always say anyway, if you want that truly amazing killer active volcano view, make sure you're at least 10 or 15 miles from the base. In fact, I know of a few gringos who live within 10 miles of one. And it's the biggest thing they see when they walk out on their balconies. And at night, they see the red-hot flow of the lava pouring down the side of a mountain too. And occasionally, they feel slight tremors when it explodes. And that can happen monthly or even weekly. In fact, I know of some volcanoes that have some first-world subdivisions well within the 10-mile limit. But we're talking about dormant volcanoes now. And of course, like I said before, it's all about the view. That said, Latin America's got a pretty good history going back around 2,000 years of which volcanoes are dormant and which are active. And there are quite a few active ones that aren't doing much, just shooting some smoke out once in a while, occasionally throwing a small trickle of lava down the side that never quite reaches the base. Some of them have been doing the same old thing off and on for hundreds of years now. So the locals believe it'll always be self-limiting like that and nothing will come of it. The fact is, every year you see on the news up in the States, multi-million dollar houses in California tumbling down cliffs and mudslides. Not to mention million dollar houses being consumed by forest fires. And you wonder, how'd that happen? And in the same places all the time too. Are we humans that stupid? Well, we really are, aren't we? I mean, look, we voted in Bush, Clinton, old vomit. Need I say more? Yep, not only does stupidity run in the human race, it gallops. Which is why we're long overdue for a good dose of chlorine in the political gene pool. But back to active volcanoes. You know, the worst part of living near an active volcano is the ash. Even if you're living 20, 30, 40, even 50 miles away, one day you might wake up to find that your lawn, car, house, everything outside is completely covered with a dusting of volcanic ash. It's happened to me twice already. Now, if you're an expat from up north, like I am from Chicago, when you look out that window and first see that ash for a second, it looks like a nice, fresh covering of snow. Lesson number one, if your car's dusted with ash, don't hit the windshield wipers. On a positive note, that's why the soil down here is so tremendously fertile, and you can stick anything in the ground, it'll just start growing. Now, if you're in the volcanic corridor, the potential for falling ash is real, but it's not going to happen regularly. And even if a nearby volcano erupts, the winds and the weather have to be just right to carry that ash to your neighborhood. However, I do remember once driving through a town that had just recently been carpeted with ash. It was not a pretty sight. Now, you might be wondering, why did I get blanketed twice with this stuff? How far do I live away from an active volcano? Well, I'd say I'm about 25 miles from one and about 50 miles from another. So, am I a little hesitant? Do I feel scared? Not in the least. However, if you bring your mother or your grandmother down from the States, and of course, they see on the news once in a while that a volcano has blown off somewhere in Latin America, and they're all worried, they will ask questions. In fact, I still get the occasional frantic email or phone call when such an event shows up in the First World News, even if it's 1,000 miles and 3 countries away from where I am at the time. That's the power of the if it bleeds, it leads popular press. That would be like phoning my relatives up in Chicago, asking them if they were all right after Katrina hit. Duh. Oh, and let me mention this. Down here in Latin America, the sun is extremely penetrating. You know, closer to the equator and all that, so the sun's rays are more perpendicular. And when you're in my favorite place, the Altiplano, you're often fooled. You're up quite high, at 4, 5, 6, 7,000 feet, so the sun's rays have less atmosphere to penetrate. Thus, their damaging effects are not only accelerated, they're multiplied. I noticed this right away when I first came down, too. Besides getting easily sunburned in about 15 to 20 minutes, I noticed that when I parked my car next to a fairly new car, just a couple of years old, the paint jobs were old and faded beyond their years. Dull, alligator-checked, chalky. Just like a lot of old, shriveled-up gringo sun worshippers you see all the time down here. So anyway, if you don't put your new or light new car in a garage, after a year or so, the paint job will never be the same. The upholstery in the dashboard will suffer too, bleached out, dry, chalky looking, eventually streaked with alligator checks and hairline cracks. You know the story. If you're from my generation, you probably owned a few beaters like that in your younger days. Hey, back then, any wheels were good wheels, right? But nowadays, you know, entitled American kids just have to have a new car. And it's gotta be the one they want, or they'll make your life miserable. Some little darlings demand a Mini Cooper. Got that in my own family. Don't get me started. God, I'm glad I don't live there anymore. Anyway, down here, if you don't have a garage or a carport, the sun can turn your nice car into a white trash mobile in about 3 years. You've gotta protect it. Bottom line, always park in a covered garage or under a nice big shade tree if you're forced to park on the street or in an open lot. And on that note, don't leave any electronics, dogs, or children in your car either. However, there are way too many cats, politicians, and mother-in-laws, so do lock them in at your own discretion. And yes, we have earthquakes too, just as you get the occasional hurricane, tornado, and flood up north. You don't like them, but you get used to them. Kind of. Practically every Latin country gets a few hundred earthquakes a week, sometimes a day. But they're so small, only a seismograph can register them. Last time we had a noticeable shaker in my neck of the woods was around 3 weeks ago. Nothing to write home about, though. Didn't even wake the dogs. It was about a 4 on the Richter scale. We get one of those about every few months. How much you feel one depends on when and where you are. If it's on the coast or you're inland and where the epicenter is located. And also your own personal sensitivity to them. Some people feel the slightest ones. Others say, what? What you talking about? In fact, I'm one of those more insensitive guys. People talk about an earthquake, and I say, really? If you say so. But we all feel the big ones. We had 2 bigger ones not so long ago, about a 5.5 to a 6, that rattled the windows and lasted for around 30 seconds. The dishes rattled, the dogs barked, the driveway chickens were worried their eggs would roll into the street, but no real damage done. Not to any first world style construction sites anyway. That's the key, you know. You have to have first world anti-seismic construction. But you knew that, right? So the longer you're down here, the more you get used to it. In fact, expat Eddie never stirs until the umbrella falls out of his drink. So to sum things up, wherever you're going to live in Latin America, there's probably going to be a volcano that's active nearby, certainly within a couple hours drive. Spectacular, yes, but no danger to us unless we happen to live on the side of the thing or near the base, as many groups of poor people often do. Just remember, the active ones have generally been bubbling and spurting away for years, and only idiots, squatters, and drunks live nearby because that kind of land's cheap or even free. I wonder why. Now, as far as earthquakes, there's a really big shaker wherever you are in Latin America, about every 25 years or so. We're talking 7+ on the Richter scale. I've been through one myself, which is why I personally would never live in any high-rise that's over 4 stories. No matter what the architects and builders say about anti-seismic first world regs. They're supposed to resist, you know, an 8.6 whopper, but this is the third world, you know, and even if the plans and the builders are all first world people coming in from Sweden or Canada, whatever, to do the project, you gotta wonder who on the construction site is doing the checking. And what about a few years down the line? You'd think the buildings should be inspected to see if there's been any damage along the way, because like I said, there are constant little earthquakes going on all the time. Again, those are my thoughts, just my opinion. Okay, we're getting close to the end of the show now, and this is for all you listeners out there who just can't make it to my Expat Insider Seminar. By the way, after the election, no matter who wins, everything, and I mean everything, points to the fact that all hell's gonna break loose up north where you live. So who knows how long I'll be able to keep doing my Expat Insider Seminars. Meanwhile, there are many, many astute listeners out there who just can't make it down to my next seminar, whether it's money, scheduling problems, or they just can't get off the treadmill. For them, there still are some very good options to move along on their Get Out of Dodge Plan B. That's why I've put together a course called The Expat Essentials. It's a great way to get your Plan B going while you're stalled up there in the States and can't get boots on the ground. Just go to www.expatplanb.com. Check out those 3 free videos that'll help you get your Plan B off to a running start. Finally, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Got about 100 videos up there now. That's YouTube/TheExpatFiles, all one word. Don't forget to subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
This is The Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.